I know, I've talked pretty much ad nauseum about how much I love Jenny Nash's Blueprint books. But now, I have fantastic and new news. Her newest, Blueprint for a Memoir, How to Write a Memoir for the Marketplace, is out now. Blueprint for a Memoir is your step-by-step guide to understanding your reader, your message, and the always-changing publishing marketplace. From finding your why, to identifying your ideal reader, and the memoir books they already love, Jenny's new book is your key to the clarity and insight your work in progress might be missing. Find it on Amazon and anywhere books are sold. Hey, I'm KJ Delantonio. This is Jenny Nash, and this is another episode in our summer 2023 ideation series, which is something we are in the process of putting together and molding into a useful conversation about where ideas come from and what we do with them once we have them.
Such a good introduction. So we left off in recent times where you had taken 4 ideas and sent them off to your agent and waiting to hear what happened in that process. So what happened in that process?
Right. So I sent her basically a page on every idea. And it was, I think it's kind of interesting to hear what it consisted of. It was like a title. I gave them all a worthy title, a tagline, in some cases, like a clever tagline. And in some cases, just something a little more generic. And then it would say something like, what kind of book, the genre, the perspective, the POV, that sort of thing. And then it had a blurb, a flap copy or back of the book blurb. And then in some cases, some extra about what actually happens, because you often end your flap copy on a question. So she got 4 of those. And then we went in and we talked about them and came out with 2 that felt ripe and ready to potentially pursue. So now I am sitting on a single POV romantic comedy and a multi-POV family family comedy. I originally thought the rom-com might be dual POV, so that may be what we talked about, but I've ultimately decided that it would be better single POV. So now I'm expanding. My plan is to expand both of them, but I'm only focusing on one right now. So right now I'm focusing on the rom-com idea, and we talked in the last time that we talked about my ideas specifically, we talked about kicking the tires, but that was me kicking some very broad tires. Now I'm kicking the very specific tires on this specific vehicle. And yeah, so I'm gonna do that. I'm not entirely sure what I'm trying to create. I'm trying to build enough that we can have a pretty solid idea of what this would look like as a book, maybe with some chapters, probably with a synopsis. It'll be pretty loose because you don't know where things are going to go. And my goal is to build that within the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I'll take a week off and then I will do the same for the second book or second potential.
And what
idea.
Happened to the 2 ideas that didn't make the cut for this more specific tire kicking?
Tire kicking. They're just going to sit and marinate.
So yeah, they're not voted off the island. They're just not elevated.
Yeah. Yeah. They can sit off in the background. And even that, so I'm really focusing on the rom-com, but the multi-POV is in my, it's in the back of my head. So that one is sort of stewing. Whereas the other 2, I would have to drag one of them. I remember pretty specifically, and the 4th one I would have to drag out of. Oh yeah, I do remember it. Okay, but I don't. Yeah, they're just tucked away, and they may or may not ever become anything. Or they might, like, if bits of those made their way into the stuff I'm working on now, that would be fine. Like, I wouldn't feel like, oh, I don't want to use that because that belongs in that book. First of all, that's often a bad plan. You don't want to save stuff. You want to spend it all out. But secondly, yeah, that'd be fine. It would be whatever. They're not I've kind of just, I probably won't go back to those in the form that they're in.
So what I love about peeking into your process is how intentional you are about the right idea. I think a lot of people believe that you write the book and you, that's how you figure out what the right idea is, that you have to write 300 pages to figure it out. And you're doing all of this figuring before you write very much at all. And I'm curious in this process that we're breaking down, the role that your agent plays, because a lot of your listeners don't have agents and they probably are thinking, well, it's easy. Your agent's just going to tell you what to do. And
what would sell. You know, yeah. Cause she just knows.
Cause she has a crystal ball.
In her crystal ball. Yeah. It tells her exactly what I could do that the market would adore. And that is why. Yeah. That is why we are the universal successful team that we are. We are a very successful team, but yeah. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is how an idea can go wrong. And so starting with this conversation with my agent is kind of a really good place to start. I go into a conversation with my agent or with an editor, if I'm talking to an editor or even a friend that I really value, value their opinion, with this sort of hesitation around sharing an idea. I try to make it pretty secure before I share it to them. That's why I had those whole pages. That's why I wasn't just calling her up and sort of like, you know, throwing some stuff out there. I mean, I think there are people that have that relationship with their agent. I didn't want that because I think it would be really easy for me to put too much weight on the opinion of somebody with more experience in the industry than I have. And your agent inherently is going to have been involved in the sale of more books than you have. Or if not, then
there you go. And what's wrong?
That would be a new baby agent. And she probably
what's
still has.
What's wrong with somebody saying, KJ, this is the book you should write. I've been hearing all over town that everybody wants, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's the book that you should write. What's wrong with that?
Oh, so much. It is so easy to get caught up in somebody else's idea. So this is a way an idea in general can sort of ambush you, right? As a freelance journalist, the route to the kill fee, which is what you get if you write an article for a publication and they decide not to publish it, and it's usually 15 to 20% of whatever they published you, the surest route to a kill fee that I have, the only kill fee I've ever had, was when an editor called me up, which is a dream situation, and said, I would like you to write an article about X. And X wasn't, I would like you to write an article about, you know, how people shampoo their hair. It was much more specific. It was more like, I would like you to write an article about how the experience of shampooing your hair has become painful to everyone because of the pandemic. Don't write that article. That was nothing. But there was enough in that conversation that I should have known right away that that person had a vision and I didn't share that vision. And I wasn't going to be able to complete it. So what I gave them was not what they wanted, and it did not work out. And I think that could easily happen with a book. And it's one of the reasons that my agent especially hesitates. Some writers, when they're established, will sell on proposal. And she'll be like, you could easily propose something you don't want to write. Like, you think you do. And you could do that for a couple of reasons. First, it could be a really good idea, but it's just not for you. And everybody gets excited about it. And then there you are, right? Or second, you could just think it was a good idea, but not have really poked at it and realized, oh, you know, if I go deeper into that story, then the guy is going to have to experience this thing that, you know, I experienced in middle school. And I'm not really ready to talk about that. I'm not ready to write about that yet. And then you would end up with like an editor going, no, but the thing, the middle school thing, come on, I want it. That'd be awful.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of nonfiction books are sold on proposal, but the proposals are way more extensive than what people imagine mm-hmm. that they are. They are so comprehensive and deep into that idea that it's almost as if you have written the book. I mean, an extensive annotated table of contents is almost as if you've planned out the whole thing. You know what's going to be in it. So on the nonfiction side, proposals don't, there's not that risk inherent in them. But in memoir and fiction, you do sort of have to write the whole thing to know that you want to write the whole thing. But what we're talking about is, well, a couple of things. Who you trust to talk to about your ideas, who you might not trust, and that figuring out that is a critically important skill for writers. I think a lot of people get in trouble with their ideas when they take them to, well, there's a couple things. People who love them, but who don't understand the way ideas and writing and creativity work. And sometimes those people who love the writer do damage by what they say or don't say. And then the other category is writing groups, which I have spoken a lot about the danger of writing groups, because there's this kind of groupthink that happens. And let's say like with your rom-com, your single POV rom-com, you take it into a writer's group and they just start piling on like, oh, KJ, really, it should be a mystery. And what if there actually are two voices? And so there's a love story, but it's also a mystery. And there's a lot, you know, and just and you come away from that losing a sense of what you wanted. You come away from both of those experiences losing a sense of trusting your own self. So how do you approach your relationship with your agent, or if it's someone listening and they have trusted or not trusted people, how do you approach the sharing of that idea to protect your knowing what's right?
Yeah, it can be really hard. I'm thinking about, so Serena and I will do like plot conversations and we will get together and you know, take a walk and hash something out. And a parameter that we create right before we even go in is you don't have to use any of this. Like if this is a idea generating walk, you know, and I'm going to say to you, well, what if it was this? And what if it was that? And hopefully that's going to make you think something, but you don't have to actually do it, because it's very easy to, you know, to throw your idea out to your mom and have her go, ooh, that's awesome. And what if it happened on Mars? And then you're like, oh, it's going to hurt my mom so much when they don't put this on Mars, but I don't really want to write something on Mars. It's red and I don't like that color. And I just, oh, and then you're just stuck. So some of it is setting expectations, I guess, with depending on who you're with. And some of it is trying to have your idea solid enough, I guess, before you run it by someone. Yeah, I don't know. It can be, it's tough. And maybe just knowing that that is a thing that happens to everyone. I mean, it really does. Like, you know, Taylor Jenkins Reid accidentally wanders into her writing group and wanders out going, I don't know, maybe it should be a mystery.
Right, you know? Right.
Like that happens.
Right. So what we're talking about is this weird thing where you're trying to find the Venn diagram of what drew you to the idea and what you like and what is interesting and sparkly to you with what you think is going to work in the marketplace. And that's figuring that out, where those two things cross over, is, well, it's all a guess for one thing, right? So that's kind of what you're talking about and what you're working with your agent on is, what do we think has the best likelihood of working that you love and want to write?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to hit, like you said, that's exactly right. That Venn diagram. And it's okay. Like the sparkly piece of this, like you're still in the phase where your sparkly piece can move, right? Which is, I mean, that is really important. So another thing that can go wrong with an idea at this phase is that you can get too attached to a particular piece of it. And it's hard to let it grow and develop. Because growing and developing is like, that's what the idea is supposed to do. But if you have really decided, you know, this is the story of a Land Rover on Mars and its search for love, and then it dawns on you that there's only one Land Rover on Mars and finding love is going to be a real challenge for him. You know, you don't want to get too attached to your Land Rover because maybe they could be satellites and there's multiple satellites. I don't know. No one is ever going to come out of this podcast going, ooh, this cage is giving me a really good idea.
Well, I just worked with a writer who had finished a draft of a novel, and I had worked with her on her blueprint, and that's the last time I worked with her. So worked on the blueprint, then she went off, wrote the novel, and it's now 300 pages with an ending that 100% does not make sense. The story does not support this ending. And this exact problem was in the blueprint, and we discussed it, and she rejected, she did the thing you're talking about, held on so tight to this happily ever after ending and wrote an entire story that does not support it. And so now here we are talking about the whole novel with this idea that she won't let go of. And, you know, from my perspective as a book coach, my job is to help the writer bring their idea to life and do the best they can with their idea and to try to give honest feedback as to what I'm seeing. And what I'm seeing is she held on too tight to this idea, and it's really threatening to topple the entire thing. And she mm-hmm. could go out and say, well, I love this ending and I'm going to try to sell this book, but I don't have to have a crystal ball to know that nobody is going to think that this ending suits this story. It's the wrong ending. It just demonstrably is the wrong ending. And so that could have been, she could have prevented that at the idea stage of not holding on so tightly to this thing. And so how do you know when you're doing that? Like, how do you know? So let's say part of your idea, your agent is now saying, that's not a whole book, KJ, that's just a scene or a setup or a scenario. How do you know that to listen to that? Or how do you know when to trust your gut on that?
So, I mean, I do, you mentioned the blueprint, and I definitely go back to that and pull up pieces of it. For me, an idea, so a setup is just a setup, and a setup is great. Like, we have a whole episode called Friends Don't Let Friends Write Books Without Hooks, but your hook is your setup. You know, what if a boy made a wish to be a big and was? That's a setup. It's a great setup. That's, you know, Big with Tom Hanks. But there has to be this story, which honestly I don't even remember, so maybe it wasn't the greatest story, but it must have been anyway. So an idea is a full all the way idea when you can tell yourself what are the things that your character, this is in fiction, is going to go through over the course of this, and where are they going to come out in the end. And ideally, you can talk about that in both terms of both the plot and the emotionality. So this is the inside outline. You know, it's all true, people. It's all true, and really, more it really is. So for me, once I know where my character, where she is or he is in the beginning emotionally, and where they're going to be in the end emotionally, I probably have a whole idea and not just a setup.
That's interesting. So it's getting excited about a setup and not doing the work of thinking about where is this going to go.
So for example, in Playing the Witch Card, which isn't out yet, but it will be, and you should all pre-order it, and then you can read it, and then you'll know what I'm talking about. That originally had a very different ending than what it has now, but emotionally, it was the same ending. So plot-wise, a very different thing happened in the end, in the first draft of that, and actually in the draft that I sold. And I changed it with, and the editor didn't even, I mean, she certainly noticed. It's very noticeable. But it wasn't a problem because it was still the same story, even though, you know, plot wise, I mean, this is, it was the difference between, I mean, it's basically, I don't want to spoil my own book, but it was a really big change.
So, but what you're talking about is being able to see the emotional arc of the story. And if you have a setup that does not lead to any sort of emotional arc of change, you can't write it in fiction. You can't write a good book about that. Probably in memoir, you can't write a good book either. So we've been talking about kicking the tires. You have to kick the tires. You have to play around. You have to try things out. And I think that that's what is happening with you and your agent, and what happens in good feedback from other people who might be your mom. Like, I don't want to throw all the moms under the bus writing groups under the bus. But what you want to do is use those people as a test of the viability of your idea, not, gee, is that an inherently good idea, KJ, to write about, you know, the love story on Mars? That's not what you're looking for.
People really want to play with the setup because, I don't know, that's kind of the fun piece. So I think one of the ways that maybe you can recognize good feedback is, you know, okay, your Land Rover on Mars, why would he fall in love now when he's been on Mars for X amount of time? Or, you know, how does that, I don't know, Land Rover on Mars is such a terrible idea. I can't even take it any further.
But we're talking about is so beautifully written about in Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc., about what they do at Pixar and the rules. So you talked about rules with Serena when you go on your plot walks. And the Brain Trust at Pixar has rules as well. And I can't remember them off the top of my head now, but I remember the spirit of them. And the spirit of them is that people ask of an idea, is it working? What is the underlying logic of it? What is the underlying emotion of it? Those are the questions you ask of an idea. And that's what can help a writer hold on to whether something is worth pursuing or not. Because if there's a hole in the logic, or you mentioned this earlier, you can't articulate why you think this idea is a story, then you have more work to do. And having someone poke at it and help you with the tire kicking is going to help you see if it, now I'm totally mixing metaphors, holds water or not. Kick the tires to see if it's going to hold water. Mutable. It's clay. It's wet clay. And you're working and figuring and discerning and holding on to tightly before it's becomes the thing it's going to become is usually a problem.
So I think what we're trying to get at is that you need to figure out what in this idea, like what is the core? What in this idea is an idea? You know, what are you, so you don't want to get attached to a particular piece that is not the core. So, you know, if you get attached to my Mars Land Rover, when really what you really wanted to do is, a hopeless love of something that is unique in the world, you know, or finding your true match when there is nothing else like you. That's a story you could tell with a different plot. So if that is your core, and honestly, your core could be plot. I mean, you could be really, really excited about, as Stephen King wrote a book called The Dome, and I always think about it because it's his example in On Writing of it, this is just a setup. Like, what if a dome descended over a town and some people are on the inside and some people are on the outside? Well, that's just a setup. But if you're if your plot thing that you, you know, if your thing that you want to talk about is what happens within a community that has been separated from the entire world, well, that, I mean, yeah, it's emotional, but it's also, you know, that's a plot thing. And then you don't want to get attached to telling that with the dome, because Stephen King did that, but you can, you know, you could tell it in a small way with people trapped in a, you know, on an island, or you could tell it in a big way with, I don't know, Australia suddenly getting cut off from the world.
Well, I love that.
There
yeah,
are options.
I love that, because you're talking about knowing what the story really is, whether that's...
Yeah, what is the story you want to tell here? And it could be an outer story, and it could be an inner story. But it's going to have both. But yeah, so then you want to cling to that and work on that as your idea.
So we're also talking here, you mentioned Stephen King, and oh, he already wrote that story. That's another thing that can go wrong with an idea, is you can either think, I can't do that because Stephen King already did it. Or what's the flip side of that? Why am I having a hard time with the flip side of that?
Well, that's been done is big, or that's too ridiculous.
Right.
Like, that's too big. That's too...
Or it's not for me.
I
have this great idea, but I don't have the skill or the
chops. I don't have the chops to do dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah, or whatever. So let's start with that's been done. People love what's been done. And when we say it all the time on the podcast, nobody ever said, please, Ellen Hildebrand, don't write another book about sisters on Nantucket. That's all they want from Ellen Hildebrand. But if you want to question whether or not we are allowed to tell essentially the same story again, I refer you to Tokyo Ever After, which is the Princess Diaries, but in Tokyo. It just is. Like, really, really, really is. And it's fine. Nobody said, hey, that's a prince. I mean, people did, but they said, oh, it's the Princess Diaries, but in Tokyo. Not, hey, you can't do that. It's the Princess Diaries, but in Tokyo. You totally can do that. Your story will be different.
By virtue of it being your story, right?
By virtue of it being
your story. I happen to have just finished binge watching the first season of Daisy Jones and the Six, the Taylor Jenkins Reid's book that is made into a TV movie. And I love the book. I loved it on audio. I love the show on TV. I just love all the things. But what struck me when watching it, much more than when reading it, is, well, first of all, it feels so real. It feels as if we're watching a rock documentary. And then it's like, this is every rock documentary that has ever been told. It's the Beatles, it's the Beach Boys, it's, you know, all the things. And those are all documentaries that I have seen and watched, and when engaged in this story or content, not for one second do you sit there and think, oh, come on, I already watched one of these. You know, it's like, this is so good, when is the next season coming?
Yeah. No, I mean, if you are a person who loves romance, then you know, like, yes, please give me all the grumpy sunshine. Yes, please. There's only one bed. They're called tropes for a reason, but they exist in every genre. Yes, please. The unrecognized leader, you know, yes, please. The orphan who will save us all. Yes, please. You know, the monster who turns out to be,
heart of gold,
you know, somebody, yeah, whatever, somebody that you knew as a child. And some of that is that the same things happen to people over and over again. You know, people get married, people get divorced, people have children, people lose their parents. There are rituals and rhythms of a human life that are part of what we tell stories around. So that's all great. But then, I mean, just to go ahead and move it past it, is the other side of that is, oh, I can't do that because it's too big. I can't, it's too melodramatic. That's ridiculous. You know, that would never happen. A little that would never happen goes a long way,
yeah.
I think, in books. I mean, I think we do reject ideas because they feel too big. And people love big ideas. I mean, you know, have a shot at it and then make it smaller, because most people end up sort of the other way around.
So what we're talking about here in general is don't talk yourself out of an idea before you allow yourself to explore it.
Or let somebody else talk you out of it before you allow yourself to explore it. That's it.
Right. Yeah. So it's holding on to the idea that you love tightly enough that no one's going to knock it out of your grip, but not so tight that you can't actually look at it and turn it around and upside down and inside out. And what do I actually have here? And seeing if it is viable and if it is a thing you want to write, all of that work needs a certain mindset, which I think you exhibit really beautifully, and you're in it right now, is I will write one of these books. They are my ideas and I love them. And I am trying to discern with the help of trusted friends and advisors, which one.
I've already, when I return this to Karen, it's been a couple weeks since we talked. When I return this rom-com idea is not the same already. It evolved. It had to evolve. Like, it had a setup that wouldn't lead to the conclusion that I wanted. So, you know, to try to push through to that. And this is, let me just say, I mean, this is not easy, and it's not coming easily to me. It feels like it would be easier to just sit down and start writing 1,000 words, like, you know, real words where people get in and out of taxi cabs and move cups around. But I am really trying not to do that, because I have already had the experience of writing a lot of perfectly good words that then didn't fit the story. And I'm trying to do something differently.
Well, spending time.
I think in the end, I'll have to write the wrong words anyway. I'm just hoping to write fewer of them.
I mean, this is the heart of the whole thing. Spending time on the idea, and what I would say, struggling with the idea, or maybe we're the more positive version, is kicking the tires on the idea, testing, putting it to a test, measuring it, discerning whatever language we want to use, I think always saves time and anguish later. And it doesn't feel like it when you're doing it, because it's, you have the idea, you want to get writing, you want to get to it. Writing, we think of writing as, well, it's a thing you and Jess and Serena display all the time, is I want to be putting the stickers in my book. That's what I want. I want to be doing my burn chart. I want to be getting, you know, in that place where I'm doing the thing. But this is the thing.
This is the thing. This is so funny, because we literally just recorded it, and I will put it in the show notes because it will already have run through your feed if you're a regular listener. Jess just sort of called Serena and I in for a master conference on the question of outlining, because she was feeling like when she was outlining, she wasn't writing. And Serena and I were both like, no, that actually is writing. The thing that isn't writing is writing descriptions of sunsets. That's not writing. Until you know for sure there's going to be a sunset in your book, you should not be describing it. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing that's not writing at this stage.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and there's a final danger that you just touched on at the idea stage, which is never choosing. Never choosing. So you have your four ideas. You came out of the conference with your agent with two ideas, and now you're going to tweak those two ideas, and you could do that for the next 3 years and not pick a book to move forward and finish. So not choosing is tempting for a lot of people, because if you don't choose, you can't get it wrong, right? And and you can continue to think that you have this brilliant idea. And unfortunately...
Or you can even start writing when you haven't chosen, and then you just end up with a mess. You know, a book that does not have, and then you have to like go in there and make the choice and then pull out the bits that reflect that choice. You can't write a book that's both about you know, love conquers all, and also family is more important than anything else.
Right. You have to choose.
Or maybe you can, but you need, well, or you need to mash those together in some way that, that you come up with one thing. Or if you're, I mean, I don't know, maybe you can, but you have to plan to do it. You can't go into it and be like, I don't know, it's something about something.
Right. So what we've circled around is all the things that can go wrong at the idea stage. And the worst of all of them is not choosing and not coming out of that process. So having some process by which you choose. And can we talk for just a minute about what if someone is listening and they're like, well, gosh, I don't have four ideas. I have one idea. And it's the idea that I've had since I was 12. And I just haven't done it yet. So this whole thing you're talking about is not for me because I have my one idea.
Oh, but it's still for you. Yeah. Yeah. This is the Chicken Sisters. Like I had that idea for 10 years before I started writing on it. But that's just, I mean, again, that's just a setup. What if there were two restaurants in the same town in Kansas named with the same name, which there actually are basically the same name? You still need all this other stuff. You need it even more. I don't know. So I'm sort of torn between, I think it might be easier to just write the book when it's the first one and you're not going through this process but it's partly because you've probably gone through this process, like sort of subconsciously over the last 10 years. So, you know, if you can lay it out and there is a story and there is all of this stuff, then no, you don't, you know, you've already done it. So yay. But on the other hand, if all you got is what if a dome descended over a city, that's still just a setup.
Yeah. So you have to kick the tires no matter what. And you have to choose, you have to come out of your tire kicking with an idea that you've committed to writing. And I want to talk in our next episode about how you're going to move. You're going to be testing out these two ideas that you have in a more substantive way. And I'd be interested in hearing, does one emerge while you're working on it as having more heat or energy than the other? And at what point do you start talking? Because you have an inner circle of people to whom you talk. What point do you expand outward from those people, or do you not? So I'm interested to see what happens after you're going to do 3 weeks on one, 3 weeks on the other, another conversation with your agent, and then we can maybe check in and see what emerges.
We totally can. I will absolutely tell you, but I think a lot of things could emerge is the thing. And they could emerge differently for different people. I mean, I know some writers that work on more than one book at once, or, you know, work on a book for a month and then sort of hand it off to a copy editor and work on another one while they wait for their responses. That's not been me in the past, so it doesn't seem like it will be me in the future, but I suppose it doesn't necessarily mean that it would be. I really resist and like want to crawl in a hole and pull back from the screen and fight you. The idea that I might put 3 or 4 weeks in on one of these and then not ever finish writing it, although that could happen. Don't tell me that, but it could totally happen.
I am currently working on two books at the same time, which is a thing I have never done. And it just was a thing that had to happen for so many reasons. So you're right. Things happen and we don't know why, or always, we can't always choose what we feel, but we can choose what we put our working energy on. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where you emerge.
It'll be interesting for me too.
Well, we will check back in and see what happens.
Yes. And in the meanwhile time, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
listeners. If you love the Hashtag Am Writing podcast, you'll love the Hashtag Am Writing emails. So sign up. You get show notes and links, sure, but that's not all. You'll get invites to ride-alongs along with bonus episodes and thoughts on revision, TikTok, and more, plus access to commenting and chatting on Substack. And we will never, ever share our list with anyone else, because we wouldn't, and because that sounds like way too much work, and we're mostly in this for the hang. So pop your name on our list at amwritingpodcast.com.